I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Now, it's Chris Harrington from the Daily Memphian on the Grizzlies and Beyond.
Chris Harrington joins me now. Chris, what's this we're listening to?
That is The Boy in the Bubble by Paul Simon from his Graceland album. So I'm sending that out to the Grizzlies, and maybe especially Ja Morant could be our boy in the bubble as they head to Orlando here in a few hours.
They leave today. You have a piece up at the Daily Memphian I suggest people read about their journey. Who's in the traveling party, Chris?
Well, you know, they're not saying names other than we know, you know, barring some change. As of yesterday afternoon, all 17 players and the full coaching staff, and when I say full coaching staff, I mean, I asked Taylor Jenkins that question, and he responded affirmatively. But my implication, and I think the implication of his answer, is that means him and his assistants. I don't think every, like, video room guy and every workout coach and all of that are necessarily making the trip. But the 17-man roster, as of yesterday afternoon, was a go. The main coaching staff was a go. By NBA rules, you have to have at least one front office person and at least one team security person on the trip. So they could choose to have more, but they'll have at least one of those. And they are taking one media relations person and one quote-unquote content person. And so, you know, beyond that, you know, I don't know the exact names, but right. It is, you know, minus the broadcast crew, which is all staying behind in Memphis, it is smaller, but not markedly smaller than what they would take on a typical road trip.
Okay. It'll obviously be different circumstances, and you point out they are one of the few teams. What are the boxes that they check that every other team does that most teams do not check?
Well, I've been keeping a spreadsheet for the last couple of weeks, and so I got three columns, I guess. I'm trying to get my rows and columns right in my head. I have three columns, one for known positive coronavirus tests, one for players who have decided to opt out of going into the bubble for whatever reason, and one for teams that have had to shut down their practice facility. And as of yesterday when I wrote that column, I had six teams that I had no X's in any of the columns, and now it's five because there was subsequently a report that an unnamed Orlando Magic player is tested positive.
And where's New Orleans on this? Where are they on your checklist?
Well, they have had three positive tests. They have not named any of the players, I don't believe. They've had three positive tests. And I believe Darius Miller, in addition to that, for injury-related reasons, is not going. And then Jeff Bezdelic, their assistant coach, got red flagged, and he is not going. They signed a free agent forward, former Clipper named Sendarius Thornwell as a replacement player, which tells us at least one player from their roster is not going. I think in addition to Darius Miller is my understanding. And as far as I know, we still don't know who that is.
And when you say got red flagged, by the way, Lionel Hollins also got red flagged. Do we understand that to mean that the NBA flagged them and is not allowing them to come as opposed to flag them and maybe they should? Do we know the process? Like,
I believe the process was all coaches had to, you know, because there was a question at one point of whether there was going to be an age cutoff. And decision was made that there is not an age cutoff. But instead what they did was all coaches, I think just all personnel period, but definitely coaches, had to submit you know, health reports or whatever, health records, and then those were individually considered by the league. And my based on the reporting, I don't have independent understanding of this, but based on what I've read, I believe at least in the Lionel Hollins case, he was red flagged and was, you know, not allowed to come in. With Jeff Bezdelic, and it's unclear to me whether it was that or whether it was more of a voluntary deciding not to go in, but I believe he was also flagged by the league.
Okay, so
it's sort of an underlying condition plus age kind of thing. Right?
So off they go into the bubble, and is there a pre-bubble? Like, what happens now?
Well, so they go. Teams have been going. It's a 3-day process. So there was a group of teams who went yesterday, and a group today, and I think a group tomorrow. And the Grizzlies are in the Wednesday group. So teams go in, and there's testing before you go in, and you know you're not going in if you've tested positive. You may have to wait and come in later if you've had a negative test. But even when you do go in, there's testing on the front end after you. Like on both sides of the door, there's testing, and so on the front end there's testing, and I think there's quarantining if there's a positive test. But also I think there's a period of isolation between getting there and before practices start as well. And so, you know, the hope is that the NBA protocols are a little bit more strict and that they will be able to catch stuff and avoid what's happened in the MLS. But that sort of remains to be seen.
Do we have any idea why MLS has fallen apart? Like, their bubble is the worst. You've got
right.
Dallas has already been sent home, and Nashville has been postponed. I mean, I presume they're not just out having a good time on, you
well,
know.
Well, I think the implication is these are players who tested positive after they got to Orlando, but I think the implication is they probably contracted it before they got to Orlando. And there's a gap between when you contract the virus and when it will show up in a positive test, right? There's a little bit of a lag time there. So I think the implication is, you know, they didn't test positive before they went, but they probably contracted it and the positive test hadn't shown as positive yet. And so I think that's the concern on the NBA. Like, do you have like an airlock in between, right? Where you sort of you go in and everything shuts and then you go to the other side. Is there enough of an airlock to prevent that? I think the NBA thinks that they have better protocols, but we're going to find out. Right. Like, I know, like, let's look at my Twitter feed today. Like John Morant was out at a gym again last night. Like, he wasn't playing. He was out hanging out, like, watching other people play in some gym tonight in Memphis, right? And so, I would have wanted to try to quarantine players in their markets for a few days before you get on the plane to go. And so, you know, we'll see.
So, and what we're assuming is that there will be somewhere along the way some positives for in the bubble. It's hard to imagine there won't be. And then we just don't know at what point it's too many. What happens if there's a team like Dallas that has 10
right.
or whatever? We just don't know. They presumably have plotted out their strategies. Here's what we're going to do if a whole team becomes infected. Here's what we're going to do. But we just don't know what those are. We don't know what the tipping points are. We don't know essentially how people will react when the news starts to unfold, although it will unfold, right?
Yeah, NBA Commissioner Adam Silver has sort of been publicly cagey on that particular point. He has said, they haven't shouted it from the rooftops, but they are on the record as saying, like, we expect some level of positive tests once we get there, and we think, you know, that can be contained and managed, and we will go forward. We're not going to have a Rudy Gobert situation where there's one positive test and the whole thing shuts down. So they have been on the record about that. He has said that there's a potential for outbreaks to halt the whole thing, but he has not been at all clear on how the NBA would handle it. I think they've left themselves latitude to sort of, you know, to react to the circumstances as they happen. I don't know if the NBA could get away with what I don't really know enough about how the soccer thing is set up because I don't really follow soccer. So the idea that you just send a team home and said, okay, well, you're just out of the competition, I don't know if the NBA if they can do that, right? I mean, maybe it depends on the team. Like, I don't know. Like, if you have an outbreak with the Washington Wizards, do you somehow just say, well, send them home and we move forward? But then how do you move forward because – you know, you have this chain reaction in terms of scheduling. And so I don't know
you
if the
have
NBA
to be, if it's obviously if it's a couple players, you just work with a couple players, right?
Yes.
If it's a whole team, even if it's the Lakers, there's no choice. If the Lakers are going to be sitting out for 2 weeks, like, you're going to just go without the Lakers, right? I mean, don't you have, like, you can't.
But how? How do you do that? Because who do other teams play, right?
It'll be jerry-rigged. It'll be a math question. And if you're in the playoffs,
yeah, exactly.
You get a bye.
And if you're already into the playoffs or something like that happens, does the team that has to sit, that has been impacted, forfeit the round? Does one first round playoff series be paused and then you're waiting for to catch up? I think it becomes an enormously complicated issue.
So they're playing the Grizzlies get into the playoffs against the Lakers, and all of a sudden, before game one, we realize 7 Lakers have to be quarantined,
right.
And so you do not have enough Lakers, and you can't dredge up enough Lakers, including all their best players. Then do the Grizzlies advance to round 2?
Right.
Or do they say, listen, Lakers, we got to wait a while here. We'll see you in 2 weeks, ladies and gentlemen.
But at that point, do you pause the other 7 first-round series?
All the other 7.
Or do they continue and then everyone sits around twiddling their thumbs until the Grizzlies-Lakers can continue?
I don't know.
The NBA, I'm sure the NBA has game-planned all these scenarios internally.
Yes.
But they're not publicly saying what they're going to do, I think, because they're going to leave themselves latitude because they may very well react differently if it's the Lakers or if it's the Wizards, right? And so you don't want to set up this is our protocol if there's an outbreak within a team, because I think they probably do want to leave themselves latitude to react differently based on who exactly the team is. Right.
So, yeah. So they're very clearly they can handle individual players. The problem is when it's widespread within a team, and you can easily imagine if it's individual players, it's going to very quickly become widespread within a team because they're practicing and they're hanging with each other and they're I'm sure there are protocols there too. But
well, and I wonder, and I mentioned this in the column I wrote, but I wonder how people are going to react when they're just. Even if it's one, if you have one individual test from some middling player and some middling team inside the bubble, like the NBA has been very clear, like we're prepared to deal with that. But I think there's still going to be a lot of people who will say, aha, this was a mistake. This is awful. You've put these players at risk. Even though what we were seeing every single day is that there's a certain risk level all these players are dealing with outside the bubble that is not inconsiderable.
Oh, well, no, okay, yeah. So I wanted to get some of the other things that you talked about in your column, because it's really interesting. One was that. It was anywhere, by the way. It's certainly true. If the same thing, even at the University of Memphis faculty, let's just say, if a University of Memphis faculty member gets sick while teaching a class, it will be, oh, my goodness, we shouldn't have a university in session. Whereas if he got sick in the grocery store, we wouldn't know, probably, right?
Right.
But at least there you could have this. You sort of can acknowledge that having university in session does increase the risk. Here we are going to pay attention to illnesses that might have happened anyway and indeed might have been more likely to happen if they weren't in the bubble than if they are in the bubble, and yet we're going to be pointing to them as caused by the heartless NBA.
But it's not even theoretical, because they've been testing since June 23rd, and we have a certain positivity rate we have already seen, right?
And it will be higher, and it's higher than, presumably, we imagine it may well be higher than what they have, than what they ultimately have in the bubble. Yes, that's an interesting point. The other point that you made, though, in the column that I thought was fascinating but didn't quite understand was how this might be a test drive for next year, and particularly when you started talking about archipelagos, I got lost.
Right.
So the archipelagos.
You don't have many reasons to use that word, so you got to take advantage of them when they pop up.
So what? And people can read the piece over at the Daily Memphian. First of all, in what way is this a test drive for next year? And then how do archipelagos come into play?
Well, I don't know that it is, but it certainly could be. If this works and this is successful and they're able to complete the season, then it presents a model for how to, you know, in the absence of being able to have games at home arenas with fans, it does present a model of how to have a competitive structure that you televise, right, and that you're able to make some level of money on and keep your league moving forward. And so, to me, and the biggest question has always been, the pressing thing is, how do you complete this season, right, and crown a champion and put a bow on it. But the big, huge, looming question beyond that, which is far bigger, is how are we going to have a 2020-2021 season? And right now it doesn't look like the idea – it sounds crazy to have fans inside arenas in December – but if you're not going to have fans inside arenas, like, why are teams traveling around the country for individual games, right? And so, like, what do you do? Do you push it back deeper? To me, and this is strictly me brainstorming, so this may be crazy talk. I don't know. I don't know if the league's thinking about this. But to me, if this bubble thing works, you could foresee a scenario where you, probably not an 82-game season, but you could devise an entire season that would be, like here's me making stuff up. Let's say you do one bubble. Let's say you do an Eastern Conference bubble and a Western Conference bubble, right? So two 15-team bubbles in two separate cities, and you just bank a bunch of conference games. And then you take a 2 or 3 week break and you reconstitute, let's say, three different bubbles. And maybe it's the Southwest Division and the Southeast Division and the Central Division and the Northwest, you know, three different 10-team bubbles of different divisions. And you bank some non-conference games and some divisional games. And maybe you take another few weeks break and you do a third bubble like that with mixing it up more. And then the fourth one is what you just did. You eliminate a bunch of teams. You say, here's our seeding games and our playoffs. And you've created this archipelago, which is a series of islands, of bubbles, and you've devised an entire NBA season based on that.
The idea is that you would have an NBA season based on intermittent clusters of teams getting together and playing each other and then right. going away and then coming back and whatever. Of course, all this is based on this idea that we're not going to have fans, or we may not have fans in the stands next season, which is a horrifying idea. But the truth of the matter is, one of the things we've seen about
the NBA's inside.
Yeah, one of the things we've seen about this pandemic is no one has ever, a lot of people have been in denial about how long this can last. And that when we shut down early on, it was okay. We've lost the NCAA tournament, and our kids are going to miss school this semester, but we'll right. be back by the fall. And now, of course, everyone in different circumstances, whether it's educational or athletic or whatever, is grappling with the way the fall has changed. And you're saying, you look ahead to next December, there's no particular reason to think that we're going to be better off in December, or dramatically, or at least able to have gatherings inside of thousands of people.
It's hard for me to imagine we would have gatherings inside of thousands of people in December. Yeah. I may be wrong, but to your point, like, everything that seemed like an overreaction has turned out to not really be an overreaction.
Yeah, everything is pretty much an underreaction. Okay. And then the other thing you raised in the column was whether it's a bad look for the NBA to be doing this at all. I have not heard much of that, I'll be honest, and I don't at all think it is. What are your thoughts on that?
I mean, we're still a month away from games, or not a month, but 3 weeks away from games. I think if you look, and we don't know where things are going to be, right? When they devised this whole plan, they decided on Disney, they didn't know that come July, this is what things would be like in Florida. And so are things going to keep getting worse? Or are they going to get somewhat more under control? And so I think in 3 weeks from now, when the NBA starts playing games, if the hospitals in the Orlando area are overrun and they are literally out of beds, and if people are backed up in car lines trying to get tests and have to wait 2 weeks for results when the NBA is doing daily testing, I think that's going to create outside pressure on the league. Yes. Is that going to shut it down? I don't know, but I think that is going to create pressure. Right now, there's no juxtaposition, really, because they're just now filtering in. But to me, that is as much of an issue as what's going to happen inside the bubble.
Well, I have a whole lunch I could talk to you about bars and schools and everything else, but we got lots of days to do it, so we will talk to you again tomorrow. Thank you, Chris.
Thanks, Jeff.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.